and start. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and call. Oops. Going to go ahead and call the November 4th True Commission meeting to order. Why don't we go around the dais and introduce ourselves, starting with Commissioner Roberts.
Bruce Tyson representing CPAC 4.
Daniel Henry. It's okay. Go ahead, Raymond.
Raymond Day representing Southeast CPAC District 3.
Daniel Henry representing City Council.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Jeff Clements, Council Research. And we have two excused absences, Keyshawn Chambliss and Vilma Roundsville.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. Noted for the record. Hopefully everyone has got an opportunity to look over the minutes from the October 7th meeting. And if there isn't any changes, I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Any changes, any amendments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So the motion approved unanimously. All right. Do we have any public comment today? Seeing no public comment, we'll go. The door is open for always for public comment. Why don't we go right into the auditor's report? So, Tommy, go right ahead.
Yes, sir, through the chair of the commission. The council auditor's office has not released any reports since the last True Commission meeting. On an informational note, the council auditor at the November 2nd, 2021 Finance Committee meeting, I noted that the city has not yet filed its annual comprehensive financial report for the year ended 9/30/2020. This report was initially due by June of 2021. However, the city had initially asked for an extension to November 1st and now has requested an additional extension to December 31st. The city does have a letter from the Auditor General's office from the state indicating that state revenue sharing could be in danger or of delay or perhaps reduction, but that is an unlikely occurrence. The city CFO at the Finance Committee meeting stated the state is being understanding. The city has hired an Oracle SWAT team to get through the issues and are making good progress. And the CFO stated that the department should have a draft year-end report to the independent auditor in the next couple of weeks. And this is all one cloud. Not getting it to work, problems, issues, things like that.
You anticipated my question. So is it still the integration issues or?
Integration and as the CFO indicated on Tuesday that it really was a perfect storm right as we were integrating into one cloud, the pandemic hit. And it's just the state's been understanding, but and to the independent auditor for them to look at, and then we'll share a report out hopefully by the 31st of December.
I know this is like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the quarterly reports each have been late for similar issues as well. Do they think that once this Oracle SWAT team, that I ever use those words together. but nonetheless, this Oracle SWAT team kind of like gets through everything and they're able to issue the year-end report that they will be up to date moving forward, or they still anticipate having some integration issues thereafter?
According to what, well, not to put words in the CFO's mouth, but he did say that they're up to August of this year, so hopefully we could have a quarterly report from the city, but it would be a year-end report. And then going forward, going into the new year, hopefully we can, as they would be on time and continue to
much is the SWAT team?
That I don't know. I can tell you there is legislation that's about to be introduced to give our independent auditors an additional $60,000 because of the additional time and work that they're having to put in to this. But the SWAT team, I don't know the amounts to that.
Okay. Would that be normally something that they just have discretionary pots of money that they can kind of drop from, or would this be project related to one fund?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and check to see if there was anything that went through council for this. Jeff, are you aware of anything?
I don't remember anything for the SWAT team, no.
So it may have been just added to their contract and amend their contract with the Oracle that we have now. It's already been approved, so it's now added a change order to the contract.
Okay.
That may have been how it was.
Just, I know they have to get it done. It's just my experience whenever you have a vendor that's helping integrate a new application, they're happy to provide these add-on type things, but they always usually come at a considerable expense. So hopefully this is not a long-term solution.
Hopefully not.
I'm sorry. Any questions for Mr. Roberts? Sorry. I say that, Mr. Roberts. I'm sorry. Mr. Carter, does anyone have any questions for Tommy?
That concludes my report. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Robertson, so I said your name and I was looking at you. That's what happens when you're thinking about someone else and then you're looking at someone else at the same time. Do you have an update from legislative tracking or any bills that you think should be brought to our attention?
I've got the usual calendar. It looks like that there's a constant turn that we're pretty heavy on the land use and zoning, the full map got revised and various things like that. Market regulation is interesting. But I found one bill of a particular interest, not the financing of the
the development project, you mean?
Well, there have been introduced, you know, to facilitate the clearing of the old times union and the construction of a commercial area, a residential area.
I think it's called One Riverside.
First question is, really, is why do we have to pay money to have people do things like that?
Georgia.
And so that's just a blank as far as I'm concerned. I see, though, that the Downtown Investment Authority is heavily involved in this, and I guess some funding is coming from that. I found it of interest that we're buying a piece of the land for a park, all things, and it seems to me to be reasonable if they convert it to a park and donate it.
I think a portion of that, I apologize for interrupting you, but I think a portion of that is needed to finish, I think, the last component of the Emerald Trail, because it's the restoration of Hogan Creek, so they're going to expand. McCoy Creek, I'm sorry. I think it's like two ships in the same time.
Another thing I did find of interest was looking through the original COVID grant. I think it was $1.9 million. And looking through the set of donors, or donees, I noticed three councilmen that chose the same one
That's the Sean D. Delphus Foundation. W.N. D. Delphus. Reggie Gaffney donated.
Can you repeat the name again?
Yes. The one I have right here is Jacoby Pittman. Harris Freeman. And Reggie Gaffney.
Oh, no, the name of the not-for-profit.
Oh, the name of it? It's Sean, S-H-A-W-N, D, Delphus, D-E-L-I-F-U-S, Foundation.
All three gave to the same one, or
no, the three councilmen gave to this organization
through the dollars that they got.
Yes, okay. $25,000 each.
Okay. And you said that there wasn't any history of the organization that you could find.
Well, it's all history of the organization. It just isn't.
Jeff, when I remember when I was watching that debate,
because it was at 11,
that I think it was either Brian Hughes or Jordan Ellsbury had come up on a response to a question as to how the organizations were vetted, and that he spoke to something almost in the sense that before the city distributed the funds after the council members selected the ones that they wanted to award, that there was some kind of cursory check on them. Is my memory like off on that one? I was just trying to remember.
I don't remember that. I must admit I was not watching the meeting at that point.
Don't blame you. But are you familiar with the process that was undertaken after the council members kind of selected the organizations they liked?
No, I don't know anything about how that worked. I could ask the council auditors or Tommy could ask the council auditors.
Hi, Tommy.
if they know sort of how the internal city process worked after the council members selected who they wanted to fund.
Okay. And then are there, and can you also find out if there are any reporting obligations that any of the recipients of the funds are responsible for providing to the city at all, or if it was just one lump sum? Was that the only one that?
Yes.
Okay.
The rest of them are pretty well-known organizations.
Sorry, I interrupted your train of thought. So, was that everything that you wanted to kind of cover?
Yes,
on
that really covers the legislative area.
Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I don't remember if I sent all of you the packet of information that Lori Boyer presented at the Lunch and Learn. It was a Monday of this week, I guess. No? Okay. On the One Riverside project, she did a very extensive PowerPoint presentation laying out all of the aspects of the deal. And I will send that all to you so that you can go through it. It's very thorough. I don't think it really goes to Mr. Roberts' question of why would we want to do this, other than the return on investment is positive by a little bit. But it was a very interesting and very thorough presentation of all of the aspects of the deal. So I'll send that to you.
Does it cover the piece that has to do with the Emerald Trail and the purchase of, I guess, the...
Yes.
Boys Creek? Okay.
It does. What they're going to do is they're going to relocate McCoy's Creek about 100 feet to the east towards the railroad track.
Is it steel in that? Or?
No. Morris Communications, the former owner of the Times Union, owns all of that property. So what they're going to do is move the creek 100 feet towards the Acosta Bridge and the railroad track. Strip of land between the new location of the creek and the bridge is what's going to be the park. The city will then fill in the existing current path of McCoy's Creek. Well, first the company's going to knock down all of the buildings and clear the site. The city is going to relocate the creek, and when they've redirected the water out the new mouth of the creek, the city will tear out the old bulkheads, fill in and grade and compact the current stream bed, and then that's where the second phase of the development is going to go. The city is going to purchase the eastern, that's 4.25 acres, I think.
Where the warehouses used to be.
Well, even further than, yeah, pretty much, yeah, where the printing plant was. A strip that runs from Riverside Avenue down to the water. It's about 125 feet wide at its widest point and like 84 feet as it gets closer to the river. But that's going to be the public park on that little piece there on that end. So the city will be buying the land from Morris, who owns it now, for the purpose of building the park, and that's where the Emerald Trail is going to come out and meet the Riverwalk.
Was there any reason given for relocating the mouth of the stream?
Because it makes the property more developable for the company.
And so it's basically a donation to the company.
It's an incentive. It's an incentive to help make the development go. The original plan, they were going to build a hotel that spanned over the existing creek. They were going to open up the creek to the daylight, but then build a hotel across it. But then they decided, as part of this whole much larger McCoy's Creek restoration project, that it needs to be much wider, which was not going to work running through the middle of this development site. So just move it over. And make a park on the far end of it. And in fact, Ms. Boyer said that the location of the creek has already been moved a couple of times. They have pictures going back to the early 1900s showing the mouth coming out in different places. So it's been pushed back and forth over the years.
Is the city going to do? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I might add that part of the relocation of McCoy's Creek has to do with a broader water management, flood management program the city's trying to implement upstream. And in fact, I believe they're removing some existing structures in order to create a larger floodplain. And as that water drains down towards the St. John's River, you have to widen the mouth of the creek to accommodate for that water flow, so you don't have flooding further upstream. So it's part of a very comprehensive program, and so there are elements of public benefit as well.
Yeah, because there's usually major flooding
to the west.
To the west of it, especially when there's like a
river around down. where Stockton crosses the creek. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real low right there. Yeah.
The city is in the process now of removing a couple of bridges across the creek and raising a couple of others by some number of feet to create more clearance underneath for the water to get through. So it's and building retention ponds and, like you said, removing some buildings and making a wider floodplain. So it's a big, big project. And this is one small piece of it. The other thing that Ms. Boyer said, and you'll see in the presentation when I send it to you, is that because of several redesigns, of developers' redesigns of how they would use this property, they are saving money in the McCoy's Creek project, and that's part of what's going to be used to pay for the new park, is we've saved money by the redesign of the creek, and it had to do with, if it was in the original location, they had to build a couple of, two pedestrian and two vehicular bridges across the creek to connect the two sides. If they push the creek down to one end, I think they only have to do one vehicular bridge now, so they saved several million dollars, and that's going to go towards the purchase of the park. So it's a very complicated deal.
Aren't they all very complicated?
Yeah, complicated, that's for sure.
Did that answer your questions, Mr. Roberts?
More or less.
Is there anything more that, hopefully the information that he sends out from the Lunch and Learn gives you more context, but happy to get some more questions that we can ask if it still does answer your question next meeting. When is it on track to be presented to council?
I believe it's up for a vote next Tuesday.
Oh, for final vote.
No, wait, let's see. It'll be in committees. It'll be in committees the next cycle. It was just introduced, I believe, so it'll be up for second reading in council, or was that this week? This was a council week, right? It may have gotten second reading.
So 2 weeks will be in committee, and then...
Yeah, I think it'll be in council next week for second reading and public hearing, then to committees the week after for the committee discussion, and then...
Final vote. Three total weeks from now.
Before Christmas, yeah.
So right before Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Oh, sorry. Before Christmas, sorry. Yeah. I'm skipping in my head. Sorry. I don't really have a lot of chair's comments. I think we kind of covered it at the last meeting where our intention was for us to get someone from the Kids Hope Alliance to kind of finish up that final piece of our sheriff's office kind of review and public safety project that we have as a commission as a whole.
I tried to reach Mr. Weinstein with several emails and phone calls and never got a response. So that's why he is not on your agenda today. I could never reach him.
Is there a ring down that we can, it's like someone below him that we can reach out to?
I don't really know anything about the KHA structure, but I'm sure there's some kind of a program director or something that we'll try again.
But in terms of that, I know we have to, our next time that we have to do our full commission yearly report is not until the summer of next year. So we're kind of at that halfway point where we start to kind of review the projects that we had set out to kind of achieve before then and see where we are. I know I have this Pierce City review. I'm assuming this is yours, Commissioner Roberts. This has something to do with the Pierce City's comparison research, right?
All right. It's not complete yet.
So I'm going to put the Sheriff's Office comparable cities research off for a second. Do you kind of want to talk about this at all, is what we have?
Paying our
What were the other cities in the bunch?
No, let's see. There are.
Oh, sorry. Boston, Denver, Indianapolis,
Lexington, Louisville, Nashville, New Orleans, and San Francisco.
That is brief, is it? And I said we are paying our load. It seems to me that we are short, probably, in education, or definitely short. We might.
Can you talk about the, in terms of expenditures, in terms of how we kind of size up with other cities in terms of our fixed costs that we have to pay for compared to the other ones? Like the fixed costs that the government has to pay for compared to the other consolidated cities that you kind of mentioned? Because you're talking about our taxes were relatively higher than some of the other cities that you were looking at.
As a proportion of the income is pretty high. So we are putting a lot of money one way or another into the government. And that's in comparison with other cities.
Which there's some logical consistency to that, if that you know that there's an embedded cost to running local government, irrespective of the income of the locality. And if we're relatively low on the income and household income size, but we still have to maintain local government, so it would be consistent that we are paying a higher proportion. I have a couple of questions on the chart that's on page 9, the expense category. Make sure I understand this. Okay, so the total expenses for Jacksonville are $5,422. Okay, per capita. And the other 9 cities, or the 10 city average, is $5,910. So on a per capita basis, Jacksonville is paying less than the city averages. So there has been an expression that Jacksonville is a city that tries to have government on the cheap.
I wouldn't say that because...
Well, no, that's a phrase that many people in the city talk about Jacksonville. Yeah, the proportion of the spending, yeah. But if you look at how we compare to other cities... Our spending is below the other city average, which sort of buttresses the argument that some of those individuals have stated that Jacksonville is known for, you know, government on the cheap. So it was interesting.
You could also say that Jacksonville pays as much as it can afford.
Or maybe more than it can afford. So just so I understand this then, so Jacksonville at $5,422 is $488 less. Okay, so shouldn't that have a negative number in front? Or is that column to say that the average is $488 above what Jacksonville pays? Okay, all right. All right, cool, thank you.
But
Public Works. I didn't need a chart to tell me that one.
Public Works, Transportation, Commerce is way down.
Public Protection, which kind of lumps the firemen and police together. We're a bit ahead, 4%.
No, we're under. The city average is 944, and we're spending 905. We're under in every single category except component units.
That's what I was going to ask. What do you define as component units?
That's because of the JEA.
Component units is a catch-all JTA.
Most other localities do not have a municipally owned electrical power system.
It's all over the place.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
What do you count in the transportation and commerce?
When you public transportation.
So they wouldn't. So JTA is not in the component units.
JTA and ours is contained in component units.
Okay, so when you say public works, transportation, and commerce.
But that's part of JTA.
Yeah, that's the part. That's what's coming.
You have to understand the way that these costs are assembled and put together.
Yes.
I try and get them to handle, but they're in the habit of doing things differently from one city to another.
Of course.
We have what is basically transportation and electricity and sewerage. Lumped in component units. San Francisco, for example, would put all those into city expense and broken out by those areas.
Because they're city departments.
Right.
So when I'm looking at public works, transportation, and commerce, the city average is just because most other consolidated governments don't have an independent authority like we do that provides
right.
those types of services.
Right. So
So
and
when
part of it's within commercial is so-called business activity, the rental facilities.
Okay. So when, thank you for that clarification. So so I see the city average based on that. So when it came to computing the Jacksonville number at 503, did that just include the public works components, or did you somehow include? Got it.
JTA, JEA, and that falls under component.
So I get the only thing I'd ask for if there was any changes is if there was a way, and it may be impossible, so you tell me, but if there was a way to separate out the public works from that category, because I'd be really curious to see the difference in spending when it comes to public works compared to most of these others.
I think I may have the information accumulated.
Okay.
I've got all the CARFA reports and the budgets and junk like that. And generally, if you go into it, you can pick up a pretty good estimate.
Okay. And this is based on last fiscal year, or?
Well, it's based on 2019, which at the time I started this, the latest information on.
Okay, so that's good. That's actually pre-COVID. Okay. All right.
If you got a question,
I'll make sure to send it to Jeff and then Jeff. Well, actually, if we have a question, can I forward it to you, Jeff, and you forward Jim? Because
sure.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure whether or not that was a sunshine thing. All right. Any other questions about Commissioner Roberts' report? Fun reading this.
May have later.
Okay. So, was this yours as well?
Legislative tracking.
Oh, okay. Apologize.
I said I'm assembling some tables there.
Okay, so why don't we go back to the Sheriff's Office, Cambrillo Cities Research. So now this has kind of been the agenda for the last, like, This is the work that
Mr. Tyson had done some work.
Last touched on
before he left. I know no one kind of like picked it up, but just to kind of address it,
where collectively, where are we all at when it comes to this particular piece? Because I know we had done a comparison level of research based on different cities that were of like sizes when it came to police forces and budgets, and the per capita based on the number of officers that we had compared to other cities that were of like size, and then we kind of stopped.
Mr. Tyson, did you had some stuff on the accidents? Is that
I was focusing just on the accident.
And then Mr. Merritt had more of a global analysis.
Right. And
what I've done is I have focused on JSO in terms of staffing. I have some information I'm happy to report at the appropriate time.
Okay. So is anyone kind of taking, so if you're taking JSO and you're taking the accident reports, that also includes JSO vehicles? Or
right.
If you could forward me, or Mr. Clements could forward to me, the information that Mr. Merritt had presented up to that point, I'll be glad to try to pick that up and craft it into some format.
Thank you. Okay. And I think after we're able to get through, hopefully at the...
address that I think later on in the meeting,
but get that through the December meeting, that I think we'll be in a better place to kind of round out everything that we've been able to discuss this entire year and start working on a draft report. Is there any new business items that anyone would like to discuss?
Yes. I'd like to present my conclusions on the staffing deficiency at JSO.
Sure.
All right. So as you remember, last month when the sheriff came and spoke, during his narrative, he said that there are two main departments within the office of the sheriff. There's the corrections, which we know that's the jail. Then there's some administrative and I think some sort of professional standards. Then you have two main departments. One is what's called patrol and enforcement. That's where the zones are staffed. Okay, we have six zones. And so you see the staffing level for patrol and enforcement, and that's the, quote, the zone staffing. Then the other department is called investigations and homeland security. So those are detectives and some other component functions under Homeland Security. So when you group both of those departments together, those are what are considered your sworn officers on the street. And the sheriff said that those two departments currently, as of the day he spoke, 1,827. During my discussion with him, as the minutes reflected, I've come across a number of 2.3 officers per thousand, which would be allocated between those two departments. So based on, and that number is derived from the average for the state of Florida, that all of the agencies within the state of Florida, the average, you know, feet in the beat, so to speak, would be 2.3 per thousand. When we just received our 2020 census numbers earlier this year, and Duval County came in at 995,568. Well, we know that the beaches communities maintain a separate police function. So if you pull out the approximately 54,000 residents of the three beaches communities, that leaves, quote, Jacksonville proper at $941,568, or 941.57 thousands. We round that up to 942 thousands. A factor of 2.3 per thousand gives you a product of 2,166, which should be our target staffing level for investigations and Homeland Security and patrol and enforcement. The sheriff told us he's at 1,827. That would give us a deficiency of 339 personnel. I had lunch with the sheriff yesterday. We had a very nice, long conversation, really got into some of the details on this. This is sort of the result of that conversation. If we make an effort to address the deficiency, we can't do it in 1 year. It's impossible. The academy can't accommodate that many people. It's physically impossible for the administrative structure of the sheriff's office to absorb that much additional personnel. So we have to do it over time. The academy can handle up to about 150 comfortably. 180 stretching the resources. Optimal is around 120 per year, right? Because it's phased through a calendar process. It's, you know, staged throughout the year. Just keep that number in mind. So, you know, that 339 is our deficiency in 2020. Well, Jacksonville's growing about 2% a year, which means every year in the out years, we have to now allow for that growth, which is about 44 additional officers every year that need to be added. Some of the past years under Mayor Curry, they've added 40 officers a year. I think 1 year they got up to 80 a year. They got 80 in 1 year. But typically it's been more around 40. So that's sort of just been treading water. Okay. If we're really trying to come up with a goal to bring the city up to some acceptable standard with an acceptable level of service, then we have to, that's where that deficiency of 339 comes in. So in order to add that many people and to add the additional staffing created, staffing needs created by population growth, we need to stretch this over about a five-year time frame. Okay. So that 44, what I call maintenance personnel, maintaining population growth, over 5 years, that's an additional 220 on top of the 339 that were short in 2020, that gap, which means over the next 5 years, we would have a need of recruiting and hiring new officers, not replacing retirements. The ones that the retirees that are replaced, they will need to be replaced as well. This is just to get us from that, you know, current deficit up to the standard of 2.3 per thousand. If we were to phase that in over a five-year period, then we will be bringing in 112 new officers every year. Remember, 120 is optimal, 150 is feasible, 180 is stretching resources. So by bringing this over a five-year time frame, we're trying to keep the academy operating at within an optimal to acceptable range of training capacity. The cost per person, new officers, is approximately $100,000 a year. Okay, so that 112 deficiency per year is a new addition to the sheriff's budget every year of $11.2 million that needs to be added to the current year sheriff's budget, which accounts for salary increases under the collective bargaining agreement and other pay raises for, you know, non-union personnel. So our marginal cost is $11.2 million a year. That's just to bring us up to the standard. Okay. We're already paying for the officers that retire, so they're already built into the sheriff's budget. So there won't be any additional cost for those individuals. They're already baked into the numbers. We're focusing on the incremental cost every year over a five-year period. So $11.2 million, I mean, to use the term of Everett Dirksen, a million here, a million there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. So $11.2 million is real money. I went back and looked at the budgets for 2019-2020, the 2020-2021 budget, and the current budget, 21-22. The general operating fund is in the fiscal year 20 was $1,267,000,000. Fiscal year 21 that was just ended September 30th was $1,342,000,000. And the current budget is $1,413,000,000. That's an increase in the first instance of $74 million. The current budget is an increase of $71 million. My proposal would be that we dedicate this $11.2 million a year out of this new revenue. These are new revenues, all right? These are not accounted by any tax increases. These are just the natural revenue growth coming off of the tax base. Correct, Mr. Carter? Isn't that where that money is coming from? Ad valorem taxes as the assessed values increase. We're currently at about 11.4 mils, I believe that is the number that the city is operating on. That millage rate was held constant this year. So, you know, they didn't cut the millage rate. So my proposal will be that we dedicate $11.2 million every year out of the new revenue, and we can use a number. We can go considerably below that $70 million just for the sake of conservatism. And we could say, assuming that the city has an increase every year going forward for the next 5 to 10 years of about $50 million a year, because we are a growing city, finally. We're a growing city, an enhanced tax base, that we can take about 20% of every new dollar of general fund revenue and allocate it to adding to the sheriff's office staffing levels, so that by fiscal year 2027, so the fiscal year 2026-2027, JSO would be standing at a staffing level of 2,386 in those two departments, as opposed to the 1,827 where it is today. So I will write this up into a more formalized analysis, but I wanted to share with you what I had been working on over the last several months. The sheriff's comments last month were extremely helpful, and then my conversation with him yesterday really helped me focus in on some of these elements by understanding the training capacity of the academy and how we really would have to stage the additions. So, yes.
Can I get a couple of numbers repeated from the beginning?
Yes.
Our deficiency is 339. We should be at what?
We should be at 2,166. That's the target.
For us to be at 2.3
per thousand population.
Okay.
I have a comment there. You know,
sure. I think that's a good comment. I think that would be something we would need to be able to present to City Council, because ultimately this is going to require City Council appropriating this money every year over a five-year period. So this would take the final year of Sheriff Williams' administration when he prepares the budget for 2022-2023. And then he will also actually prepare the budget for 2023-2024 when the new sheriff comes into office in July of 2023. 90% of that budget is baked in from the outgoing sheriff. So Sheriff Williams will, in essence, be putting together the first two budgets over this five-year time frame. Sure, we have to obtain that. I agree. Yeah. So anyway,
more questions.
Yes.
Do you know what our officers per thousand is now?
We could calculate it real quickly. Hold on, I'll tell you.
Should be at 2.3, and we're at 1. Something, I'm sure.
Yeah. So if you say that the operative population number is 941,568. Okay. And so that number is
1827 sworn officers.
Yeah. 1827. Make sure I've got this right. Okay, let's do this. 941 is our thousand. So 942. We're at 1827. 1.94. It's a substantial gap, yes. We're 18% below where we should be. Over time, yes. Yeah, over time. That's why we can't do it in 1 year.
More than 18% because you're dealing also with a rising population.
Correct. That's what has to be done over a multi-year period.
What was the number you said that we were short right now?
339. And I will present this in a more formalized narrative because we're going to have to in order to, when we issue our final report, this has to be able to be defended. And again, this is my opinion. This is based on my analysis. The other members of the commission may not feel that this is a critical issue like I feel that it is.
Did you? So a lot of times, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of times the new revenue that is kind of captured every year in the fiscal budget, just by everything kind of remaining flat, is used for the normal increase that they give every department just for inflation. So is there, do you kind of factor that in by dedicating 1/5 of that to this dedicated source?
Yeah, and the point is that if every dollar of new revenue, we're only going to take about 20 cents of it to bring the sheriff's office to where it needs to be. 80% of the new revenue is still available to the mayor and the city council to do with as they please, not to mention the non-general fund revenue that can be allocated and utilized elsewhere. So I think it's a modest proposal. I think it gets us to where we need to be within a workable time frame. And I tried to look at it over 3 years, and it can't be digested. It's going to take longer. Thank you.
Can you also factor in, because this kind of went into my questions when the sheriff was here at the last meeting, because I know one of the things that I asked and they sent me something that I have to follow up on because it was kind of in PDF form, was the, and you tell me if it kind of came up in the conversation, was the projected cost that they anticipated for manpower over the course of the next 5 years, because I know he has spoken a lot about the relatively young force that he has. So there's obviously going to be outflows when it comes to retirements and then new hires in the process. So I guess the two-part question I have did he speak to how you deal with hiring new officers that are new to headcount and replacing the ones that are going away, so that way you kind of cover both and you don't end up right where you were before?
Well, as we have retiring officers, they're replaced with lower cost, to put it in blunt financial terms. Your higher cost officer is rotating off of the shelf, and you're bringing in a lower cost officer on the bottom of the shelf. And as their tenure extends, then obviously their price per year per officer increases because of the cost of living and step increases as they move up through the ranks. And we discussed that, and that's where the $100,000 per year per new officer comes from. You've got initial salary, benefits, equipment, and you have to maintain that equipment. So over a time, that equates to about $100,000 per officer.
And a car.
And the car, and that includes the car, correct. Equipment, vehicle, officer, the whole nine yards.
If the car survives, I think you would have a report that said it doesn't. Just poking fun for a second.
There's hardly room in there for a salary.
Will the information also kind of speak to, because the natural question that someone's going to ask based on what you just said is if the lower cost officer is replacing the cost of a higher price officer, then how do you make sure you're not getting more dollars that are needed and that some of that cost can't be absorbed by the cost savings that you're going to attribute?
That's a very good question, because we haven't even started to look at the operational analysis of the sheriff's office to determine where are there some economies that could be realized to be contributed toward this increased cost. That might actually reduce the incremental marginal cost of the new officers on a year-to-year basis. We might only need, $9 million in new revenue every year, that if the sheriff's budget, and we'll use a number, about $400 million, I think it is, maybe a little bit more, that if you can carve out, 1% of that, that's $4 million a year in savings that can be applied towards, adding officers, the ride-along psychologists. There's a program. What do they call that?
Co-responders.
Co-responders. And he spoke to that. He said he would love to be able to enhance that program. So, and again, I'm just trying to address the deficiency in sworn officers. So that $50 million a year in new revenue, that's a public policy decision for the city council and the next mayor and the next sheriff, that do we want to take some of that new revenue, and as we add to the personnel of the sheriff's office, do we also want to enhance the level of services? The bottom line right now is the officers are so busy responding to calls for service, they don't have time to do the community policing. They don't have time to build a relationship with the members of the community that in a long term you can create a higher quality agency. And that's the reality.
One could also make the argument, because I know a lot of the dollars that the city has already received, and I'll end at this here. A lot of the dollars that the city has received both from, primarily from the federal government, when it came to the recovery bill particularly, gave dollars not only kind of to deal with the money that they lost in revenue, but to be able to kind of add in public sector jobs like city jobs or JSO as well. So I'd be curious to see, because we have half the pot coming in the next fiscal year. If that money could also be used for increases as opposed to the salary increases that I think the city's already negotiated into the next contract.
Yeah, the new collective bargain agreement was just approved about a month or so ago, and you know, that's contract requirements. So
yeah. Anyway, that new money that we approved, does that just take into it? Because I know they use the Recovery Act dollars. Sorry, not recovery. Yeah, the Recovery Act dollars for that. Did it just factor in for that increase that they approved for city employees and for first responders? For that initial pot they received, does that also factor in the new pot that they're going to get next fiscal year?
That I do not know. I know that they used part of the current allocation for the one-time bonuses. And did some of that go into the pay raises as well? I think it did. Some of it went to the one-time bonuses. Some of it went to the negotiated raises. But I don't know about future years.
Sure. And then we... Yeah, I think we're almost... Sorry, yes, sir.
So I'm not saying that it lowers your overall cost. What I'm saying is that your outgoing officers that are at the higher pay scale, well, the incoming officer is compensated at a lower level. Yeah, that's a lower cost per person. However, yeah, per the contract. Right. So I'm just, the point that I'm making, we're just trying to add staffing to the sheriff's office to get it up to that standard. And yeah, and again, that's something that when the sheriff presents the budget, he's going to be saying, you know, based on this year's increase per the contract, this will be the cost of our in-place personnel. This is the cost of new recruits. Then the next year, those recruits are part of the in-place personnel, and they're going to begin that increase in salary level, correct?
I may have contributed to that and oversimplified it. So my apologies for that. Any other comments related to that new business item? All right, then I think we're at the point where we have commissioner comments. So does anyone have any additional comments they'd like to add for the meeting?
No.
Okay. Our next scheduled meeting is for December the 2nd. I probably think at that meeting we're also going to have to determine the schedule for 2022, which is crazy to think we're already at that point. So if you want to take advantage of the gap between now and then to kind of look at your schedule, anticipate whether or not we want to stick with the first Thursday of the month or use the new year to kind of change it up, come to that meeting with some ideas. Otherwise, we'll probably stay with the same kind of schedule for the meeting. Both the legislative tracking and the audit committees will be called by the call of the chair if there is a purpose for them to meet. Tommy, do you anticipate there's going to be any audit reports between now and the December meeting, or now that you're finished with the budget, or it's hard to kind of... With that, any last comments before we adjourn? All right. Well, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Seeing no objection, the meeting is adjourned. See you all back here on December the 2nd.